morning and welcome to the Thursday, April 30th, 2009 edition of the Investigative Journal. I'm your host, Greg Szymanski. You're listening to LibertyRadioLive.com, and my guest today is Cheryl Barnes. She leads a citizens' watch group that's outlining and telling the American people about the abuses in the nation's child protective services networks throughout the states. And today we're going to center in on the Tony Alamo story, talk about basically what's going on, the update in that story, as well as giving you some information on what happened in the past. Cheryl, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Oh, great. Great to have you with me today. And if you could just outline for the people who missed our last interview how you started, why you started this organization, and the ups and downs throughout the years. Go ahead.
I started this organization in 1997 when my son was removed from me for refusing to apply for Medicaid, and he was subsequently abused in foster care, leaving him legally blind and permanently brain injured. Throughout the years, we built our membership up to 12,000 at one point, and 6 years ago, the government had came and took all of our computers and backups, and I still don't have them back, and our server crashed on the same day. I assume that they were involved.
Now, when did you start this organization?
In 1997.
And tell us some of the abuses you found that are going on in this country in the different state child abuses, child protective services networks. And I probably said it right when I said child abuse network. Go ahead.
Well, the funding kind of works towards removing children from their parents, and it's really been that way, you know, from the beginning. The people that made up the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children were the same group of people that made up the Eugenics Society. That it was really like a kind of prevailing thought pattern of taking children away from poor parents, either keeping them from having children and then taking their children and having them raised by more suitable people. That's kind of in the course throughout the beginning. That's backed up by the fact that if a child is in foster care, they only get federal money if the parents are AFDC eligible under the old AFDC guidelines when we used to have straight welfare before we went to CANF. That's still the law on the books today. So if you take a child from like a rich person and put them in foster care, the state doesn't get any money for that child.
So there are basically given incentives to take children from poor families, to leave rich families alone. Tell us a little bit about these federal laws that basically give child protective services, state services, bonuses for the number of children that they take in.
The states don't earn any money until they put children in foster care. Like, they only earn federal money for children that are in foster care. They're supposed to provide family preservation type services, but they have to do that with their own state money. Additionally, the states are rewarded for increasing adoptions every year. The adoption incentive bonuses are paid $6,000 per child and up, and the states have to increase their number of adoptions every year to get that bonus.
So really, they're given incentive. The more children they bring in, the more money they make. And this could lead to abuses, don't you agree? Have you seen that trend?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, most states have more terminations than they have substantiations. That's very common. Like, so many kids were removed, and maybe two-thirds of those, they found that abuse had occurred or it was substantiated. But then, like, 80% of those ended in termination or parental rights.
Now, since you started this in the 90s, has the problem grown worse? What's your take on this?
Yes, the problem has definitely grown worse with the concurrent planning, where they start from day one planning for adoption at the same time as they're allegedly offering reunification services.
Mm-hmm.
And since the funding, you know, works that direction, it also works into a problem for, like, younger kids, because the courts take into consideration at a termination hearing whether or not there's an adoptive family available. They shouldn't. It's unfair. But if there is an adoptive family available, state, the court will be more likely to terminate. They're somewhat reluctant to terminate and make what's called a legal orphan if it doesn't look like the child's ever going to be adopted.
Now, on my show, I've outlined some of the abuses by having parents on, some from Florida, some from California, others from the South, talking about how they've been, basically their children have been kidnapped. Specific instances like a simple dog bite leading to the taking of an entire family away from the parents who were loving parents, who had a home, had jobs, and it was a simple accident. Other cases are even more absurd. For example, a mother tries to keep her daughter from going to a school dance. The daughter complains to the counselor. The next thing you know, they're being taken into child custody. Cases like this seem to be, if you'd listen, well, they must be out of the ordinary. But when you look, there's hundreds of these. I've checked into a website called SaveOurChildren.com where outlines just scores of these kind of cases that are just really crazy. If you look back, this was something, if you look back 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, this never occurred. Parents were allowed to raise their families. Accidents do happen. And I think what's happened here is that they've used any little thing to get as many children into their system to, one, basically make money, and two, I think there's an underground plan to disrupt American families at the higher levels. What's your thoughts?
Well, I would agree with both of those assessments. I think that the workers are kind of indoctrinated to be zealots and think that everything amounts to abuse. They're sort of educated that way. And I do believe that there's a higher up plan to break down the family. You know, in the past, they've tried to pass things like parent licensing and all that kind of coincides with that. And as I said, you know, we had the eugenics idea at the same time that Hitler had it. He went another direction with it that didn't work out. And so in America, we just decided to take a softer approach. The child Mary Ellen that first caused there to be a child protective services organization, she was what would be a foster child. Back in those days, if children were orphans because of the war, they went to orphanages, and if they were young babies, they would be sent out to families in the community. Well, this child, Mary Ellen, she was raised by a family in the community, and the lady beat her severely, and that lady actually was convicted of child abuse and went to prison, but they kind of used her case to start the whole Child Protective Services as a government organization. But the principles are the same. Hitler did also eugenics by nurture, where he founded the Lebensborn home, and pregnant women who could prove the heritage of their child would go to this home, and they were well taken care of, and then when they had the baby would be given to a good Nazi family so that it would have a good Nazi upbringing. So he went both ways, you know, with exterminating the Jews and then also trying to take children early on and raise them to think differently. And we still have that thought process in America. If you read a lot of their literature, you know, that's the goal, is they want children to think differently. Particularly in the Tony Alamo case, they've instituted a deprogramming plan right from the beginning. The parents' case plans complain that they are disrupting the assimilation of the child into mainstream and things of that nature.
Yeah, we're going to get into that in a minute, the specifics of the Tony Alamo case. I did want to mention, though, this goes hand in hand with, if you look at the United Nations Education Plan, the Worldwide Education Program, you will see that they want children into the system's education by the time they're 3 or 4 years old. Basically an indoctrination system of creating a state child. And that they tell you right in the literature. Have you looked into any of the United Nations plans? Go ahead.
Yes, I have. And it's very common to see a case plan requirement that people put their children in daycare, even if they're not working. And part of the case plan for the child to come home will be that the child has to go to daycare. That's very common.
Right, and it's a way to get the child, you know, into their system at a very young age and away from the family's, basically, their influence. So you can create this kind of, and they even say it in the literature in the United Nations, basically a global child, a child of the new millennium, the global era. And really, it's dangerous. And I think Child Protective Services in the States is just the basically the police arm to get children into their system. This is shown by your groups. Tell us about some of the cases over the years that you've come up against that show you categorically that what we're saying is true.
Well, like the Tony Alamo case, obviously, where they're taking all the kids from that church. There was the Heartland Ministries, the same principle, and then everyone's kind of familiar with FLDS. And individual cases, they will remove children for all kinds of crazy reasons, domestic violence, and, you know, like say you're fighting with your spouse and you call, even if the child's nowhere around, they'll remove the kids, make a referral. In Missouri, it's state law. If you apply for a protective order, they have to make a referral to DFS. And then, of course, they're going to come and investigate you. In Missouri, there's the Dominic James case. He was taken from a preacher, and they were divorced. The mother had a drinking problem, and she kept coming around the house and causing trouble, and he kept calling the police. Well, the police, one time when they came out, they just went upstairs and took this sleeping child from his bed and put him in foster care. He was 2 years old, and then he was beaten to death in foster care. The case got a lot of media attention because the father never did anything wrong, and he was a really fine person. But there are children all the time taken for being homeless because the parents hold beliefs or in retaliation. A case that we just got involved in Louisiana, the father's daughter had been in foster care, and then he regained custody of her. After he got her back, she started to tell about sexual abuse that had happened and how she was taken to places and videotapes and things of that nature. So he made a complaint with the Louisiana Attorney General, and they came and took his kid again, and his kid's in foster care right now.
Right. I mean, we could just go on and on this whole show and talk about cases that, particular cases. I refer our listeners to a website called SaveTheChildren.com. I've had a gentleman on who started that website just to alert people of what's happening. His name is Greg Pound from Florida, and the story that he tells really provides a perfect example of what Cheryl's talking about. And if I could just tell you the facts a little bit, if you've forgotten the people who listen to my show. Greg Pound and his wife were a Christian family living together in Florida. They own their own home. His wife was a teacher. He was gainfully employed. He had no criminal record. They didn't have a drinking problem. They didn't have a drug problem. And they brought their kids up in a Christian atmosphere. There were three kids at the time, young children, when Greg's wife invited her sister over from Michigan. Her sister from Michigan had a dog, and the dog accidentally bit one of the children in one of its playful moods. It wasn't an angry bite. It wasn't something where the dog attacked the child. It was basically one of those instances where you turn your back for a minute, the child is playing, and the dog gets a little anxious and nips at the child, breaking the skin. So the first thing they do was to take the child to the hospital, which was basically what maybe any parent would do. They go to the hospital. They tell the story like I told it. And the next thing you know, the next day, Child Protective Services is there with policemen to take the three children away, which they did. That was 3 or 4 years ago. They've been in protective custody ever since. His wife since had a baby. They wanted the baby as well. She went into hiding. There's a warrant out for her arrest because she won't turn over the baby. And he hasn't seen his wife, or maybe just has seen her basically in a way where he can't tell anybody where she lives and maybe sees her once in a while to protect her, all based on this simple dog bite. The question is that what the kind of system you want, America? Now, even if there was a basically an accident that occurred and the child had a bite, don't you think that do you believe that's a reason to take four children and disrupt the family? I don't think so. And I gave you an example. And let me just give you this, Cheryl. When I was a child, I don't even remember this. I was about 3 or 4 years old, and I'm a little older. I go back a ways, so they didn't even have child protective services back then, and I think that was a good thing because I believe my parents and my grandparents took good care of me. Now, and we didn't need the state to tell us what to do. So anyway, I'm told the story because I grew up and I have this huge scar on my arm right where you bend your elbow on the inside. And I asked my dad once, I said, where'd this come from? And he said, well, when you were 2 or 3 years old, you went up to your grandma's. We lived in a 3-story house in Chicago where the family all lived together, one above the other. And I guess I was on one of her old rocking chairs, and there was a nail sticking out, and I basically cut myself on the vein, and it was a really bad cut. Well, they rushed me to the hospital. I had my stitches, and I was home, and I was taken care of, and everything was fine. Now, fast forward that to today. If I did that in Florida or in probably any state, there's a good chance that they would have taken me away from my family. Case in point, isn't that interesting, Cheryl? If you look at, that's basically boils down the whole problem, doesn't it?
Right, and it makes people afraid to seek medical care. It actually puts children at greater risk because people would be afraid to go to the hospital for something like that, thinking that their child could be removed.
Yeah, and basically what they could do then is if you don't go seek medical care and somebody finds out about it, they can come back and take your children for that reason, couldn't they?
Exactly.
So they got you coming and going. Your organization, I want to get into Tony Alamo probably in the next half hour. We got about 5 minutes before the break. But tell us about your organization started up in the 90s after this happened to your child. We outlined that story on our last program, so we don't have to go into in-depth on your personal story. All we say is they took your child for frivolous reasons, and this started your quest into this organization, plus doing a lot of legal research to maybe get to the bottom of this, alert people, and maybe get the system changed. Tell us the growth of your organization, and then how the government wanted to stop it. Go ahead.
Well, as I said, we grew to 12,000 membership. We published a full-color magazine at one time, and we had an enormous website. And the government had come in to take my children in 2003, and they took all of the computers that I had in my house and all the CDs, and they even took our VCR and every videotape. And the same day the server crashed, the server which was in New Hampshire had crashed, and I had never got to build it again because it took a long time the first time, and not having any backups, it was a lot of stuff to come up with. So.
And that occurred when?
2003.
And since then, have you been able to rebuild your organization? How's it going?
It's going very well, and I feel like we're more effective now, because we actually are working on cases and we have counsel, as part of our legal team. So I feel like we're making more of a difference than before. We just had the website and the magazine and we kind of offered like advice type, whereas now we can actually get involved in cases and make case law and make real changes that I think are more important.
Right, and as you're doing, getting behind the Tony Alamo story, we'll get into that after the break. But to set up that story, tell us about some of the other churches or fringe churches out there who have been attacked by the government and children taken away. I'm thinking of the FLDS and another ministry that you worked with. Tell us about their stories, which will lead into the Alamo story after the break.
Okay. Well, the Heartland, it was in 2002, and they it's kind of like a community that was built, and people go there sort of as a refuge. People send their troubled teens there as an alternative to sending them through the state, and they have levels of discipline. The highest level, you have to do a hard day's labor, which in that case was shoveling manure on their dairy farm, and the state came in and removed 160 children because of this shoveling manure policy. And then we did a federal injunction and got all the children returned, and it was converted to a permanent injunction, so the juvenile officer cannot remove children from there without going through the federal court.
So basically they tried to disrupt that organization and used basically a day of labor. For example, I know many kids wake up and work with their parents on a farm. I don't see anything different in that. Tell us about FLDS.
Well, they, of course, refer to them as polygamists and so on and so forth, and they've just taken misinformation. If you want to start attacking churches, it's going to be obviously easier if you start with the most controversial churches, because the public will tend to look the other way. So the FLDS people are to be highly respected. I have nothing but good things to say about them from the times that we were there. They do sort of a betrothal-type practice where they have girls sealed to their future husband early, like maybe around 15 or so, but the girl continues to live in her father's house until she's ready to go and live with her husband and have children. They were unable to prove that anyone had had a child under age 18 in that place, but they, you know, in the media, they refer to these sealings as marriages when they're not, and more importantly, they're not sex. And so, but by doing that, you know, they could get the public to look the other way. It's the one thing that you can accuse a person of is sexual abuse that will make the public look the other way, because everybody wants to take the just in case it's true standpoint. And so people are reluctant to intervene or to defend somebody like that just in case it's true.
And something that should alert the American people to possibly rush to judgment on the part of the state is that in both cases you will see that the media is set up to present, they're notified of the raid, then huge articles appear all over in the mainstream media depicting these organizations as cults, places where children are abused. So that story gets out pretty quickly. Then you will find the same modus operandi. They will then try to seal and cut off any information that the parents may have to counter those arguments by using the law, by stating juvenile cases are to be held behind closed doors. I believe that should alert people to a sinister reason in the beginning, because if these cases should be held behind closed doors, why are they so quick to get to the media when they do their so-called child protective services, basically their first, I just call it a stormtrooper raid on these ministries. That seems to me a big issue, don't you think, Cheryl?
Yes, and where people, you know, kind of make mistakes, they think it doesn't affect you.
Cheryl,
you know,
could you hold that thought? We're taking a break. It just snuck up on me. Back in 3 minutes.
Okay.
LibertyRadioLive.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States in 1963.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no secret is revealed. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President today.
You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
I've got a vision for what I want to do for the country. See, I know exactly where I want to lead. It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
Some have spent my living an illusion, bounded by the darkness of their minds. In their eyes it's nation against nation against nation, with racial pride.
Okay, we're back on the Investigative Journal. My guest is Cheryl Barnes. She started a citizens' watch group in the 90s to alert the American people about the abuses going on in our state child protective services organizations across the country. It's a huge, incredible story that has really ruined the lives of so many American families, taken thousands and thousands of children away from their families, putting them under state custody, where you'll find in many cases they receive more abuse there than they would if they were with their families. We're going to highlight the Tony Alamo story in this half hour. But before I get back to Cheryl, let me mention this program tomorrow. I do this every once in a while. And my program tomorrow, at least for the first half hour, is going to center on the media outlets, especially in the alternative media, because it's important to know where you get your information. I have a pivotal point to talk about, and that is much of my experience with these organizations, places like Genesis Communications, Republic Broadcasting, the American Free Press in Washington, some of the larger fringe internet outlets, I believe, through my experience, are basically working for the United Nations, working for our global enemy, the Vatican, working for the organization called the New World Order, but doing it in a way of making you believe you're getting the truth when they're taking you, only giving you part truth, and then leading you away from the real important stories. You don't hear much about these stories on their shows. You don't hear much about the Vatican, and I believe that is a huge, huge story that needs to be told. And if I could just say one thing, if there is one thing the internet bloggers and independent news networks have in common, it's all these conspiracy theories. Think about it. And that's a misuse of the word to begin with. From alien abduction, secret underground government laboratories, ultra-secret global networks, and political assassinations. So, you know, it's really understandable, because that's where most people go. And in fact, I received a letter from an ex-Portland police officer yesterday, who basically said that's where he used to get all his information when he got tired of the mainstream media, because you can kind of obviously see they cover up the major stories. And he said he now has turned away from them and is listening to Liberty Radio Live because he believes that he's getting the more of the truth here. This story has been overlooked, and here we have a Portland police officer talking about that. So, you know, it's perfectly understandable when a person turns on the internet to go to these places. You don't hear this story on those networks, do you? In fact, most patriots have turned their back on this story. And I will not, I have to say that because it's true. And the reason they have is because they really don't understand the truth behind this whole global network. Now, it's understandable that people come to my website at the Arctic Beacon or this radio station, and they hear about these alleged crimes of the Vatican and all of its connections, such as the Jesuits, the Franciscans. Even if I bring lawsuits in front of you that are now being filed and are going on in San Francisco, outlining their connection to the Croatian genocide, that's still not good enough for you, is it? Now, it can easily, you know, I can see why you'd rather listen to these unfounded claims and hoaxes, because it's pretty easy just to think, well, it's a government official, but it isn't that easy. So sometimes it's the complexity of the story itself that makes it hard to understand or believe. Like when the people involved in the alleged evil event lived 50, 150, even 1,000 years ago, it boggles the mind. But it's not beyond your comprehension if you take it step by step. It also makes it hard when the story involves talking about former countries and empires with strange-sounding names and customs. This is why the mainstream news phenomena, such as the global media coverage of the Vatican's deliberate cover-up of organized international rings of child-molesting priests, particularly in Western countries such as the United States, Europe, Canada, and Australia, is so important. That's why this story is so important, because it proves without a doubt that the Vatican does not always behave in the best interests of the community, and in particular for its own faithful, the Catholic families who entrusted their children into the priests' care of the priests and nuns, only to find years later that their children have been molested. Now, this story is huge. Why isn't this story in the front pages of our newspapers more? Because, you know, there are thousands of children under their care right now that are being abused, and that they're allowing it to happen. And I believe it's because they work together. Now, they'll take a story like Tony Alamo, and we're going to get to that right now with Cheryl. And the underlying case here is that Tony, for 40 years, has been preaching about biblical truth regarding the Vatican and being the Antichrist, not afraid to pass out brochures about the government connection to this evil network. And I believe that's one reason they've tried to bring him down, not only in the 90s, but today while he sits in jail, on a phony charge that will be proven soon, that he did not do anything wrong. Now, in the meantime, they've taken 35 children or more into custody. This is another way to break up this ministry. And basically, I've had on my show first an FBI agent who was assigned to bring this ministry down in a clandestine type of manner, and he said he left the FBI because of this story. And that was back in the 90s. When I had him on my show, Cheryl, he said here that the same thing's going on now, that he's heard through some of his inside sources that he still keeps at the FBI, that they wanted to set up Alamo again and once and for all bring this ministry to an end because they were growing and they couldn't have people like this talking about the truth about the Vatican and our government and Clinton's connections to them, as well as Bush and Obama. And so this is why they're being brought down in a major level. Now, let's get to the particulars. Cheryl Barnes, along with the women that are working with her and men working with her, have filed an appeal with Attorney Phil Kuhn, who's a well-respected civil rights attorney, to try to get these children released. Tell us the update of this story, Cheryl.
Well, we filed a motion for a preliminary injunction along with a federal complaint. The basis of our complaint is that the state has instituted a campaign of harassment towards the church, by targeting its members with child abuse investigations. Since we've been uncovering records, there's all kinds of really shocking information about collaborating and planning with state attorney generals from various states and things of that nature that, you know, obviously your normal case doesn't get that kind of attention straight from the beginning, but this case did. There was a lot of planning that went into it from the beginning. Of course, immediately the state motioned for a gag order, what you would call a gag order, and we responded that it wasn't necessary, that all the children's names are redacted by federal court rule anyway, and it wasn't necessary to have a gag order. Further, the state's required to confer with opposing counsel and see if you can reach an agreement before they can go into court with such of a motion. they disregarded that, and their disregard for that is an indicator of how they do business, in my opinion. They think that anyone opposing them is not reasonable, that everybody will make the wrong decision if they're not telling them what to do. So the fact that they went straight to court rather than conferencing with our counsel is just an indicator that, well, they assume that because we sued them, we couldn't possibly reach any reasonable agreement.
Okay, so last time you were on the show, you just filed the case. How did Phil Kuhn get involved in this civil rights attorney?
Well, we just asked him to do it, I guess. He's the best attorney. He's our lead counsel of our team, and he's the oldest civil rights attorney in America. And he's really good. He's really interesting to be around and have a conversation with.
Okay, so we have Phil Kuhn on the case, and this was filed last time you were on my show, and that was, what, about 3 weeks ago, a month ago? And what's going on now? Any progress? Has there been any hearing set, or what's going on in that appeal?
No, they're supposed to have their response May 1st, I think, or it might be May 4th. And we expect them to file a motion to dismiss, and then we'll, of course, respond to that. All that's happened so far is they did the gag order motion, and we responded to that.
And one of these interesting things about the gag order is that people have to understand that, okay, let's say the law is written where juvenile records or hearings are sealed. Now, a judge has a discretion in this case. People may not understand this. A judge will have a discretion in this case to allow some information out. He's done that basically without saying anything by allowing certain media coverage, and they can't stop that. Hearsay, what they would call it in the courts. But he also, in a case like this, it's unique, and I think it should be brought up. It's not just an individual case. It's a case of 35 children from a ministry. Now, I believe that if the judge was fair, he could maybe impose a gag order on certain things regarding the individual children to protect them in a sense. Which, in a case, when you're looking at a strict case, you know, there may be some merit. However, when you see he wants to put a gag order on the total story, which would have no effect on the individual children, and what I mean by that is, when you have a story like this, there's much more going on behind the scenes. And I believe if he was fair, he would allow the parents to have their say, to allow their story to be out in the open so that people could really understand what's going on. Now, he may say, well, that's not important, but there's really no jury here. It's him. There's no jury behind there. This is a juvenile case. And so what is he worried about? He's basically worried about bad publicity. He's not afraid of the good publicity he gets from the media. He just doesn't want to hear the truth from the parents. And I believe that's the reason for his gag order. And he wants to keep the truth from the American public so that there isn't an outcry and he's not basically found to be just one of their boys trying to do what he's told. Because one of the biggest lies in this country is this. One of the most endangered species in this country are honest judges. And that is a statement that I was made by a friend of mine before he died. That was Sherman Skolnick. And he was an advocate of court reform in Chicago for over 50 years, and his story is amazing. Sherman passed away over a couple years ago. I believe it's been that long. And he taught me one thing. He said, that is the truth. He wrote his book about three honest judges and how they were railroaded out of their positions for basically trying to get a fair trial in huge cases of government fraud and, in fact, connections to the Vatican. Very interesting. But anyway, Cheryl, I wanted you to comment about that because I think it's important. I just can't understand why Americans do not get behind this story. Do you think they're so brainwashed, so uncaring, that they won't do anything unless it happens to them?
Yes, actually. I think that there's a real lack of critical thinking skills in America as a whole, and that really starts in the public school system, that even people that I know, they'll, you know, like my grandmother, she'll see the news, and she'll be like, oh, but they're doing this, and they're forcing girls to get married, and so on and so forth, and I'll say, well, no, actually, it's just this myth, and present it another way, and now she's completely convinced the other way. But it's amazing how people just see what they hear on the news, and they don't question it. They just take it as fact, and then they go on about their lives because they think that it doesn't affect them. The thing with these mass removals is the government's just trying to get some legal precedent in place that says you can remove children based on association with a group or association with a set of beliefs. Once they have one case that has set a precedent that said, yes, it's okay to remove children based on association, they will begin to target more mainstream churches, you know, Pentecostal, Baptist, and so on. They'll begin to target homeschoolers. But right now, you can't remove children based on association. It violates the First Amendment. So they feel that by going after some more controversial churches, the public will turn a blind eye. The judges really are kind of indoctrinated, you know, as I said, like with the social workers, they're kind of educated to think that way or to believe that way. They're more zealot than conspiracist, I think. But once you have a judge that says, oh, we can't have this going on, and we're going to remove all these kids at risk because their parents believe a certain way, well, that's your one precedent-setting case. Now you can go on and target more, not just churches, but other types of groups, like political activists, for example. And so it does affect all of us. It's important for all of us. And as I said in the last show, even if everything they have said about Tony Alamo was true, you still can't remove all the kids from all the parents unless you prove those kids are at risk of being abused.
Exactly. I mean, they've taken an approach here to try to basically put Alamo in jail for what I believe, and when we've looked into his story and his past, is bogus charges, which he's going to prove in his case when it comes up in May. It's a separate case from the children. Then, of course, they rip apart the ministry and take these kids. Now, how many kids are in custody right now? I always get differing. Do you have an idea? I always get differing figures.
I believe it's 36. And
okay.
There's an order for 92 more children.
Right. And there was a story that appeared yesterday that shows the government is out looking for more children that were associated in the past with the Alamo children, with the Alamo ministry, in order to put them into custody. Have you heard that as well?
And one interesting thing, there's a man, Mr. Richards, I don't know his first name offhand, but he has a spiritually smart blog.
Tom Richards, yeah. He's been on my show a couple years ago for other issues. Go ahead.
Well, he left the ministry on bad terms even, and he is still defending them and saying that there was no abuse going on there. Well, just because he defended them on the Internet, even though he's not part of that church and everyone knows he's not, they went to his home at 5 a.m. and pulled him and all of his kids out of bed and interrogated them. You know, so not only could you maybe lose your kids because you belong to this church, but you could lose your kids just because you stand up for them or take their point of view.
Yeah, it's a witch hunt in a sense, and I believe, you know, I wanted to say this. Let's bring Richards into the story in a second, as well as let's look at a name that I want people to Google, Robert Mueller, M-U-L-L-E-R. Now, he's a big wig with the United Nations heading up the World Education Association that is putting into place a global education plan. That's in place in many places now. I believe the target date was 2005, whether parents know it or not. I've talked to people from South Africa who are basically seeing their educational system change before their eyes, children being forced to go to school in the state while they're 4 years old, and basically indoctrinated into the system. All I ask you to do is look into Mueller's background. Look into some of his statements, and you will see, and I will just make a categorical statement now based on his own statements that you can find, and I presented this in another show, that he is a Luciferian. It's simple. He is a Luciferian. Now, do you want your kids to be brought up under that cult, United Nations? Look at their spiritual worshiping room. Look at the people behind this. You start digging into them, you will see that they will tell you who they are. And so this state organization basically is backing up an organization that's Luciferian. They have no intentions to control them while they prey on good Americans. It's that simple. Now, we better wake up quickly. because you're going to see if this Alamo case goes bad, and what I mean by that, if they get their precedent, you're going to see it in many more places. And even Pope Paul II told us in 1992, in one of his statements in when he was talking about ecumenism and this global movement to have everybody come under the umbrella of the Roman Catholic Church, he was saying that we're not worried anymore in America about Baptists, about Protestants, etc., the main churches. And basically he said it in a nice way, but the reason he said that was because they're all following Rome anyway. What he's worried about are the small splinter groups, he said. And he said they must be talked to, must be convinced, and if not, we're going to have to look for other ways to get results. Now, that's a nice way of saying, if you don't listen to what we tell you, and you start talking bad about us, we're going to have the state governments come down on you. Case in point, Tony Alamo. So America, wake up. Because if Tony Alamo is preaching biblical truth, whether you believe in all of his views or not, that's not important. What is important is that he's able to talk about them. And we have cases. I mean, most every person that's been on my show or I've talked to said they've never seen any abuse at the Alamo ministry. And, in fact, the FBI agent who was assigned to bring him down says the same thing. Now we go to Richards that Cheryl just mentioned, Tom Richards. Tom has a website that is highly critical of the Vatican. And he brings out some really great information on that website. And I know Tom. I've spoken to him. He's a former Catholic, by the way. And he saw the truth and wasn't afraid to tell you. Now, his association with the Alamo ministry, like he even says from his own words, didn't end on good terms, but he doesn't speak up against them because he never saw any abuse there. Now, why would they want to go and disrupt him? Why would they wake him up in the middle of the night and disrupt his family? Well, I believe it's not only because of his connection with the Alamo ministry, but they're using that as a means to get at him to shut his website down once and for all one of these days.
Right.
And I think,
he would be terrified.
What do you think?
Yes, because then he would be terrified and he would think, well, it's not worth it for me to risk my family, so I'm just going to stop this. That's obviously the idea, is to scare him. The other really important thing that I want to mention is that they haven't given any of the kids to the non-offending parents, where parents are divorced and the other parent's not in the church. They have an absolute right to custody of those kids, but they're not giving them to the non-offending parents. And
wow, that is an interesting fact. I've overlooked that. So we have,
I think that should be taken to indicate that they want to keep the kids in care where they can be questioned by the FBI and they can be groomed to become witnesses. If the kids aren't under the control of the government, they may not ever testify against Tony Alamo, but if they're under the control of the government where they can be seen by therapists and questioned by the FBI and so on and so forth, they may eventually turn into witnesses.
Right, and all I want to say, and that is just really an abuse. I mean, that's an interesting aspect. I hope you heard that out there. We have parents, maybe we have one parent in the ministry, another outside, and they're not even turning it over to the parent who's not involved in the ministry. Now, that just really upsets me when I hear that. Now, people, we have to listen, here's my plea, and I know Cheryl would back this up. I would like you to go to Google this story, look up Philip Kuhn, look up Cheryl Barnes, her organization, go in depth in the Alamo ministry, talk to the people there, look at their website, go to articles written about them, go to the ones that are even smearing them, I believe. Many are out there right now. And then go to and then make up your own mind. But don't allow this court system to just do it behind closed doors. I believe that we need to get behind Tony's case, and that's Mr. Alamo, who sits in jail now since last September. And we need to get a fair trial here. We need to have all the facts come out, because I believe if all the facts come out, he will be vindicated. The government wants to railroad him like they did in the 90s. He already spent 4 years in jail on a trumped-up tax charge that he's got right out on his website and showed how they did it. And even John Peeler, the FBI agent, told us on our show that they set him up for that, and that was his recommendation before he left the FBI. So I believe we need to get behind them. Now, we need to get behind these kids and these families, and we need to get the truth out. We need all the facts out there. That's all I'm asking you to do. Because if all the facts are brought out and this story gets public attention, I believe it will have a devastating effect on their plan to take over fringe churches. They want to keep all criticism of this New World Order plan and one world government, one world religion, out of the minds of children, out of the minds of America. Now, do you want your kids to grow up under a fascist regime? That's what it's going to boil down to. You want your kids to grow up as free-thinking individuals who respect the Bible, the morals of society, and not be indoctrinated at the age of three, being taken away into state custody. It's a Hitler movement, just like it was in Germany, folks, and Cheryl said that earlier. So please, get behind them. Get behind the Alamo Ministries, and all I ask is that you look at both sides of the story. Don't be propagandized. And I believe when all the chips are laid out on the table, these children will be brought home to their families, the ministry will grow even stronger, and the Word of God will hopefully even seep into the minds and hearts of the people working for these agencies who are just blind right now to the truth. Any last thoughts, Cheryl, in our last minute or two?
Well, I did want to say that, you know, that with regard to the non-offending parents or the divorced parents, that a court previously gave the parent custody that was in the church. So that court deemed the kids were safe in the church. The other parent, the non-offending parent, never stated they were unsafe in the church until they saw an opportunity to regain custody.
Okay, Cheryl, we're all out of time. Thank you. We'll have you on again. For all of you out there, good morning.
Thank you.